Blog Talk Radio.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today. Sporting backpacks and they're on their way, yo. Trying to learn the things we like. Going to my class, everything's alright, oh. No one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No, whatever grade level or type of school, my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together, I'm shaping students that'll shape forever. The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools. And you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse. So I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse. Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride. Gotta get there on time, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, so open up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I run my class like I know I should. I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood. I thought you understood. I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah. Getting my class to spread the wind. Being at school makes me wanna sing, oh. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. We can change the world together. Teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever. I think it's time we change the weather. We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future, and the future's gaining speed. If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed. And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is on time, gotta open up their eyes. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah. You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses,
and we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. You're jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Oh,
class is online, gonna open up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.
Welcome. Today begins season 3 of Teacher Talks. Thank you for joining us on episode 1. I am your host, Stacey McClam, live on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international brand created by Beverly Black. This season is sponsored by School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching by Stacey McClam, available on Amazon. I am an educator, author, and filmmaker. I have 10 years of elementary teaching experience. I've taught first grade through fourth grade, but mostly first grade. I've taught in Washington, D.C., Denver, Los Angeles County, and also abroad in Japan and Kuwait. Last year, I resigned from the teaching profession and wrote a book entitled School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching, where I describe why I left the teaching profession. The book raises awareness about the trauma that students and teachers experience at school. In between my teaching career, I went to law school to bridge education and the law for education reform reasons. However, after graduating, I noticed that it took too long to change policy and return to the classroom. I have a great respect for teachers and the teaching profession. Currently, I am a substitute teacher as I transition from teacher to filmmaker. I have written 3 short films and directed 2 of them. I am currently in development for another film. My goal is to create films about education issues. I feel that I can better serve students outside of the classroom by exposing people to the realities that occur inside the classroom through film. Now, I'm very excited about today's guest. He is not a stranger to Tribe Family Channel. His name is Larry D. Davis. He is a superintendent, and Mr. Davis was born and raised in Fort Worth, Texas. He is a second career educator with over 20 years of teaching and administrative experience. Mr. Davis' experience is broad and extensive, which includes 8 years of teaching and 12 years as an administrator, serving in such roles as regional superintendent, district coordinator for college career readiness, CTE IB program, district coordinator for special programs, high school principal, and a house principal. Prior to becoming an educator, Mr. Davis worked for 14 years as a general manager and recruiter in the corporate world. In 2011, he published his first book titled Preparing to Pass the TEXES Principal Exam. He has conducted professional development workshops to help prepare students for their success on the principal exam. In 2015, Mr. Davis developed several educational platforms to help students, parents, teachers, administrators, and central office staff. His second book is entitled The Re-Education of the African American Child in Today's School System, where Mr. Davis presented on working with our 4D students, defiant, difficult, disrespectful, and disruptive students at the Educating Children of Color Conference. Hello, Mr. Davis. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello. Hello, and thanks for having me.
Sure, and I know you all in where you are in Texas are back in school after the winter break. I'm in California, and in Los Angeles, a lot of the schools start tomorrow. Some started last week, but thank you for being here, and let's get started. So how did you become interested in education from the beginning? How did you get interested in education?
Well, I actually never was interested in education. In fact, I said the only way I would go back to school is if they paid me. And I guess they are paying me. But in 1995, I was about to be a dad, and I need to know more about education because I want to know if I wanted my child to go to public, private. At that time, charter schools were not on the, were not on the horizon. So I started substituting, and my very first substitution job was at Webb Elementary School in Arlington ISD, Independent School District here in Texas, and it was a first grade Spanish-speaking only classroom.
Oh, wow.
And I don't speak Spanish. And so the secretary of the school asked me, do you speak Spanish? And I said, no. She goes, well, Mr. Davis, the kids in there don't speak English. And I told her I would stay there until they could bring someone on. But the teacher had left really good notes, and there was one student, and she spoke English and Spanish, and so she helped me until about noon when another parent came in to read to the students. At the end of the day, those wonderful students were like telling me, thank you for coming. We appreciate you. Oh, you're so tall. Come back, come back. And I asked the parent, what are they saying? And she was telling me. But I drove home that day, and I realized, what if that was my child sitting in that classroom with someone like me who brought no value to them? And that bothered me. And so for the next couple of years, I kind of just made my exit out of the corporate world and into education because I wanted every child to have someone in front of them who was going to add value to them. So every student who comes in my classroom, comes in my building, comes before me, I put my son and my daughter's face on them, not the color of their skin, but their face, and I want to make sure they get the education they deserve.
That's a good visual to put the face of your children or other kids you know on the children in your classroom. That's, I've never heard it said like that before. That's interesting. And so we know there's a huge teacher retention problem in the U.S., and I remember last year specifically reading about Florida and all of the issues that the state of Florida has with walkouts throughout the year, in the middle of the year, and there were a lot of articles on it. And so you're in Texas, and I know it's a problem nationwide, but I just wanted to talk to you about that and see why you think that is and what you think administrators can do to help solve that problem.
Well, you know, we have to look at the whole problem as a whole. Teacher turnover costs the nation $2.2 billion annually. $2.2 billion dollars of taxpayers, school district money that's going down a drain because of high teacher turnover. And we understand that that's just a financial cost. Let's look at the more important cost. You know, and I know a lot of people think money is the most important thing. No, when you have high teacher turnover, you're going to continue to see low student achievement. If we don't have teachers in front of our kids consistently building relationships with them, we're going to continue to see student achievement decline. We're going to continue to have more failing schools. We're going to continue to have more low-performing schools. And school safety will always be on the forefront of every conversation, because how can you really say our schools are safe when we don't know who's in our schools from day to day? And lastly, how can parents and communities trust a school when they don't know who's working there? So we have to do something about high teacher turnover. And you said Florida. Texas leads the nation at 31.5% in teacher turnover. And we have a growing number of teachers leaving out in December. And again, you can probably speak more passionately about why you left, you know. But when people say teachers are leaving because of money, well, only 28% of all employees from all across the industry, education, technology, service, entertainment, only 28% of those people leave because of finances, because of pay, because of money. That means 72% of our employees we can retain if we know the root cause. So tell me, you know, please, I know you shared with your audience before, what was one of the reasons you walked away from teaching?
It was not getting support from administrators with students who have a lot of issues, and it's not – it's beyond classroom management, and it's not because I was actually, you know, good at classroom management. It was, one, the number of students that have a lot of mental health issues. And I taught mostly first grade. And so even that young, it was amazing to me. But not getting the resources, and it's not that even because I have had administrators who even if they didn't know what to do, it assured me and other teachers, if they at least understood our plight, you know, and tried and showed us that they were actively trying to do something. But if you don't do that, then teachers feel neglected and they feel like they aren't getting the help that they want to help. They want their classes to succeed and, you know, the students to learn. But if they feel powerless, then it starts to eat them up, and they get depressed and overwhelmed, and secondary traumatic stress and you know, begin. So that is mainly the reason. And as you mentioned, with the high teacher turnover, I remember one teacher leaving, well, many teachers left during the year at some of the schools I was at, and one in particular, the classroom was right across from me, and so it made me sad just not seeing the person anymore. You know, it made me think, like, what kind of school is this where just the consistency, you know, it hurt me, and I know it hurt the kids too. And so it made me think, like, what reasons, why do teachers leave? So I definitely understand what you're saying.
And, that was powerful. You said something really powerful. You looked across the hall and the teacher was gone and it made you feel sad. How do you think it makes those students feel who had that teacher half a year and all of a sudden that teacher's gone?
Right.
A teacher who's been working with them. So so you just said it. If it made you feel bad as a colleague, how do you think it made those students feel? Because, you know, as parents, we tell our students, don't get involved with strangers. Don't talk to strangers. Don't do this with strangers, right? And to bring a new face in a classroom mid-year, that is the essence of putting a stranger in front of children.
Right. And it takes time for students to build trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep.
And our children don't trust quickly, and they don't trust easily.
Right. You're absolutely right. And especially at schools where this happens every year and multiple times throughout the year, one of the schools, I was in transition sometimes, like between law school and teaching, and so I had to begin a school mid-year. And at that school, I was teacher number 22, and that was in March. That's how many substitutes they had before me. So it's a real thing. And, you know, by that time, the kids were checked out. So when I got them, it was crazy. But
well, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me ask you a question. If you're an employee and mid-year, you have a supervisor number 22 in front of you, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an unorganized, ineffective system. Organization is what I would think. Something's wrong.
Okay, that's right. Something's wrong. It's hard to commit to something like that. Hard to commit and hard to feel like you're appreciated or you're wanted because you don't know. Yesterday, Mr. Davis told me how much he valued us and that we were important, that he loved us, and today he's gone. You know, those things leave stigmas on children. You know, you talked about a first grade teacher and a social emotional impact and a trauma. Well, and you know what?
Mm-hmm.
That mind is so young at that age, those are tough to deal with because when they get to high school, they've had a lot of interventions along the way. So the child you were dealing with had very few interventions to help you out, whereas by the time that child gets to ninth grade, they've had 8 years of intervention, 8 years of assessment, 8 years of medical support and clinical support. But in first grade, they've had very little. And I could understand that being very traumatic for a teacher at that level.
I never even thought about that. that they haven't had been assessed because now that you say that, some students couldn't even qualify for an IEP because they weren't old enough. So yeah,
they weren't old enough. And federal law says they have
mm-hmm.
to have 2 years of organized school before we can assess them. And if they came to you from a home school, if they came to you in kindergarten, now in first grade, this is their second year. So we don't even have any data on that kid, and it is tough. You're working without a net. You're pretty much working without a safety net, you know. And I'm just going to tell you that, you know, we really appreciate you because you are the ones who's getting this data for us to start to help this child. Unfortunately, to you, it's like you're working two jobs. You're trying to educate a child and trying to support this child emotionally, intellectually, you know, socially, and you don't have a system in place to where you can get the support you need from the home, from your administrator, or from other educators who's had that child because that child is totally new to the system.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so your role as superintendent, how are you trying to address this issue with teachers?
Right. And I'll say I'm a regional superintendent. So I have a superintendent who's over me. So I'm a regional superintendent. And the thing is, I primarily deal with 7 through 12. So I don't really have I don't have any pre-K through, you know, 6. However, I do work with school districts and schools, so I do see the situation and the issue. And the thing is, another thing you probably had to deal with was the number of parents being involved at that level. Because we know we have parents, and I don't know if you worked at a Florence school, low socioeconomic schools, or what. I mean, what kind of school, high Title I, economically disadvantaged, what kind of school were you working at?
They were all Title I, low income, and not much parent involvement.
Right, because those parents work. They have to work, and they work, you know, night, evening, and getting up, coming during the day is kind of tough. We have a lot of challenges as teachers and educators before us. But, you know, I mentioned to you just offline earlier, I have my campaign I want to start is Education Needs a Champion. And mm-hmm. we have to find ways. Here's our before we even start talking about teacher retention, here's the biggest issue. Mm-hmm. We learned years and years ago that no significant learning takes place without building relationships with children, right?
Right.
Yet we bring mm-hmm. teachers into our fold, and we don't have that significant relationship with them. So we're not even supporting them. The next thing is we mm-hmm. learned a long time ago that education, differentiated instruction. We have to differentiate instruction to help children learn, right?
Right.
But we give those kids the same assessment. We don't differentiate the assessment. So it's like we realize we need to do something, and then we don't follow through with it, you know.
Mm.
So there's a lot of things when you look at our education system. That's why I say education needs a champion. And I'm asking every teacher out there to be the champion that education has been waiting for. Now, when we start talking about why teachers leave, we know that, let's just look at it. So 28% leave for financial reasons, right?
Right.
We know that 500,000 teachers a year leave the profession altogether. And when mm-hmm. you ask them, they first thing say no support from administration. So here's the thing, Stacey. People leave leaders. They very seldom leave companies and organizations. They may say, oh, I left McLean High School. I didn't like McLean High School. Well, what they're really saying is I didn't like the leadership at McLean High School.
Mm.
People may say, I used to work at AT&T and I just left AT&T. Well, no, they didn't work for the entire AT&T organization. They worked for a specific supervisor, a specific manager, a specific leader, and that's who they left. So mm-hmm. you're right when you said you wasn't getting the leadership support that you needed, the administrative support. We have to get our administrators trained. We have to get those people organized and get them a support system so they can ask for help and know where to go find help. There's a book mm-hmm. out. It's called The Smartest Children, The Smartest Child, or something like that. And mm-hmm. in that book it says, mm-hmm. instead of asking a child, what do you do when you don't know the answer? We should ask the child, where do you go when you don't know the answer? That's the same thing we need to ask adults. Where do you go
when you don't?
When you don't know the answer, and get them a support system. And we need to do better at that. And we're not doing a great job at it because our education system is still steeped in a routine that's been going on for thousands of years. We mm-hmm. have to change the way we do business. First and foremost, with all the resources that we have at our fingertips, with all the finances we have at our fingertips, we should not try to teach every kid the same way, but teach kids the way that they learn the best. You know, we can do that. I would love for every child to be exposed to an education system where their care, their learning, and their unique individual talents are always on display and are the focus of our education. Well, we can't do that because most states just have state tests, right? Most states still have state
right.
testing, or they mm-hmm. have, or we call it standardized testing, but there's no standardized child. So until
right.
we recognize that every child is uniquely different, every child has unique talents, and every child presents a unique set of problems, and we build our schools around that, we're going to struggle, and teachers are going to leave because they
mm-hmm.
don't have the leadership and administration to recognize that to help them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mentioned a lot of interesting things. I don't know where to start, but one of them is about differentiation and is how do we work within the system, though? Because, you know, there are people that say, well, we have to have standardized tests and, you know, the state of Texas, for example, does have a standardized test. So how do we differentiate for students? Well, I know that some students with an IEP, you know, they may have special accommodations, a longer time to work, or they may have certain manipulatives or extra resources. But in terms of, like you said, the standardized test, how we can't differentiate for a standardized test. And how we would have to change the system.
We shouldn't have a standardized test. That's why I totally agree. We shouldn't have a standardized test because we don't have standardized children. And if we spend our time here's the, if we're teaching a child how to change the why did we change a flat tire? What's the purpose of changing a flat tire? Now, I know this is nothing we would teach in school. And the child understands that we need to change the flat tire because the car doesn't function properly with a flat tire. It's not safe. They understand that. Then we teach them how to change the tire, but they don't get it. So we teach them how to change the tire on a bicycle. And then we teach them how to change the tire on a motorcycle. And they say, oh, I get it. So now I know how to change the tire. I know why we change the tire. But then we start to assess them. We put them right back in front of a car to change that tire, which they never got that one. And we go, you fail. No. They understand why we need to change the tire. They understand the reason we change the tire. They even know the premise of changing the tire. They just couldn't change that particular tire. But here's the funny thing. If we took that same child and put him at, not NASCAR or Indy, mm-hmm. where they just mm-hmm. have one bolt on the tire, guess what? They would pass mm-hmm. the assessment, right? So mm-hmm. we fail in kids when they know. They know the majority of the material. They know the majority of the objectives. But we're failing them because they don't know it the way we want them to know it, and they don't say it the way we want them to say it. I mm-hmm. asked my teachers when I was a high school principal, if I walk into your classroom and I do 25 to 30 walkthroughs a year, and every time I come in, you're using technology. You have students up at the board participating. You're doing collaborative learning. You're doing all these great things, right? And then the one right. day I come in and do your evaluation, you're not doing those things. Should I mark you down and say you didn't do them and make you below expectation because I didn't see them on that one day of evaluation? And they go, no, Ms. Davis, you should not, because you've seen us doing it throughout the year. And my response mm-hmm. was, then why do we do it to children? We ask them questions. They raise their hand. They answer it. We know they know the answer. We know they know the process. We know they know the understanding. But when they take the test, they miss the problem, and that's the grade they get for that 6 weeks. That mm-hmm. one question that they know the answer to, you don't give them credit
right.
for it. Mm-hmm. So we need to give children credit for the learning process, the approach to learning, not just the assessment, and allow them to be able to fail and succeed at the same time. You have to learn through failure. And, you ever notice our kids who our top 10 kids who – fight for valedictorian, salutatorian, when they go to college and get that first C, it is devastating. Mm-hmm. We have to mm-hmm. make sure our children have an opportunity to fail and learn from it, and not just, fail and fail. They can't, failure mm-hmm. can't be the reason that they refuse to take a chance.
Mm-hmm.
We teach mm-hmm. the creativity out of our children, but we need to be talking about teacher retention, right? I'm sorry, but
no, it's all related. There's a connection because all of
okay.
it, that's part of why teachers are leaving. But it's then changing the system. So you're at. Well, I don't know if it's superintendent, if you're directly influencing policy not from the state. Is it trickling down at your – I'm trying to figure out how we could change
if we wait for it to trickle down from the state, it's not going to do it because the state is going to be government. It's going to be political.
Right.
It has to trickle
mm-hmm.
up from parents, from students, from teachers, who are in the trenches every day seeing what it takes to help our children be successful. Here's a question I get asked all the time, and I'm pretty sure you've had the question asked to you. Mr. Davis, is there a learning difference between students of poverty and economic disadvantage versus students from more affluent areas? And they want me to say yes. And you know what I say? No, it's not. I said there's a difference mm-hmm. in what they've learned, but their learning ability is the same. I said their learning mm-hmm. potential and their learning capability are exactly the same, but what they've learned is what we're judging them on, and we'll always say, oh, these students are they're behind, and they're not going to be here. No, they're not there now, but if we have a system where we can spend time and connect with those kids and build on what they know and then take them to where they need to know, their learning capability is just as high as any other kid. We should not allow zip codes, communities, poverty, low socioeconomic, economically disadvantaged. We should not let these labels impact the learning of our children.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we do. We use those labels to give us reasons to where it's okay to give a kid a 70. It's okay to give a kid a lower grade than this kid from this more affluent area. But there's been too many success stories of children from those areas being successful. Alice Walker, you know, come on, let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. There are just so many great stories of children who came from areas that was impoverished, and look at what they're doing.
Right.
You know.
Right. Interesting.
Well, go ahead.
No, but we're going to take.
Here's the thing. I wake up every morning and I think every child deserves. You know, Rita Pearson said it. Every child deserves a champion. Every child deserves an opportunity.
You're right. You're absolutely right. We are going to take a quick break and return live on Tribe Family Channel with Teacher Talks right after this.
Hi, my name is Stacey Matclam. I am the author of School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching. I wrote this book last summer after I resigned from the teaching profession. Writing the book was therapeutic for me. In the book, I discuss why I left the teaching profession. I also discuss trauma and mental health concerns that many students, especially very young students, endure. Finally, I discuss teacher trauma, also known as secondary traumatic stress. This book is not just for educators. It's for anyone who has walked away from something that was not serving them. I am realizing now that my path in education is outside of the classroom. Check out my book, School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching, on Amazon in digital and paperback format, or go to my website at www.stacymatclam.com. Again, that's www.stacymcclam.com. You can find me on all social media platforms at Stacey Matclam. Thank you.
Hi, we're back. I'm Stacey Matclam, your host of Teacher Talks Season 3 with my guest, Mr. Larry D. Davis. So, Mr. Davis, before the break, you mentioned that every child needs an opportunity. Now, I'm interested in you as a regional superintendent and a day in your life, what you do on a daily basis in maybe interacting with administrators or teachers to help students have an opportunity. Like, what does your day look like?
Well, you know what, before I answer that, let me tell you what here's my why. This is why I do what I do. I believe, I wake up every morning believing that if I can inspire an educator, who can inspire teachers, who can inspire students, then we can make a difference. I think that we can take the norm out of normal. I think education is a cure for the common life, and this is my belief. So every day as a person, as my why, it has nothing to do with my title. If I was a classroom teacher, my whole goal every morning would be the exact same thing, to inspire adults, to inspire educators, to inspire children. And so that's my normal routine. I have 7 campuses located throughout Texas, and every one of my campuses, almost 100% of all my students know who I am. And that's rare, because most central office people, they come in, they only want to talk to adults. I talk to every child, every teacher, before I even talk to my campus principal. Why? Mm-hmm. Because I want them to know that I know how important they are and how much I value them. I have students who will email me directly telling me about their success stories.
Wow.
When I was a high school principal, I took over a school that had been low performing for 4 years. In fact, we were under the state education agency to oversee us, because the school had been performing so low for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the number of students that we had, and I found every student who was not connected to the school through sports, through band, through theater, through choir, through any organization, they were not connected. 55% of our students were not connected to the school in any manner. They were coming to school and going home. I had every one of my teachers. Each teacher had to pick two students. It was called a 2x2x2. Each teacher had to find two students. And they had to talk to that student twice a week for 2 months in two different settings. It could now. You and I couldn't have the same students. So now, when we first started talking to these students, you know how they looked at us? Why is Mr. Davis talking to us? Why is Mr. Sam talking to us? But then when I talked, after 2 weeks of talking to him, before I could say anything, hey, Mr. Davis, right?
Right, that's true.
And then
that's
it really
true.
Surprised
yeah.
them when I would walk into one of their classrooms, because I had to talk to them in different settings, right? When I would walk into their classroom and say, hey, Jonathan, how you doing? Hey, Mr. Smith, how you doing? I just want to see how you're doing in this class. I heard you was, you know, doing pretty good in this class, and I heard the teacher bragging about you. I want to come and see for myself. And now they're looking like, whoa, what is Mr. Davis doing? And I'm so important.
He cares.
And then I would go and speak to them in their clique while they're standing in the hallway with their friends, and I would go up and speak to them, and I would speak to their friends. Now, I only called his name, Mr. Johnson or Jonathan. I only called his name, and then I spoke to his friends. Now, everybody in that group thinks, who knows him? They think, I know him. And now I just built relationships. Now those kids are connected to the school. Now when I say, hey, Jonathan, get to class, it's not somebody who doesn't know him. It's not somebody who hadn't invested in him.
And they move
down the hall, they get to class. Building relationships. You know, in my new book that's coming out, it's called Working with Our 4D Students. I have this, it's called The Davis Model, and it talks about building those relationships with our students. We have to make investments, and it's called, we have to make positive deposits into them before they can make anything in us, right? But most adults like to think, well, if they don't show me respect, I'm not going to show them respect. No, we have to show them that respect first, especially at the high school. You know, it's funny, you know, you said students are coming back tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
And they've been out of school roughly 3 weeks. Do you know the number of students who left before the holiday and they're coming back tomorrow? And in that time, no one has told them, I love you. No one has said, hello, I've been thinking about you. How are you feeling? How are you doing? No one has checked on them. They've been fending for themselves.
Right.
A lot of students.
Yeah.
We, as adults, we can make a difference. Education needs a champion. That's all I will keep saying to you. And we do.
We do.
And I know it's not easy, you know. The student who... The student who needs love the most will ask for it in the most unloving ways.
Right, right.
So.
You're right, you're right. And the 2x2 that you said you used with the teachers, that's a great idea to help students feel connected to the campus. And even, as you said, going to the cliques, it's not only for that one student, but everyone in that clique now knows that when you say get to class, you know, they're all going to be getting to class. And it's
right.
no confrontation.
And don't disrespect Mr. Davis. Yeah, don't disrespect
right,
Mr.
Exactly.
Davis. Get to class.
Right. Uh-huh. Yep. And they'll check each other, too. Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, I was at a conference last year, and it was at TASB, Texas Association of Black School Educators. And there was a teacher stood up and said, Mr. Davis, how do I get a student to pull his pants up and take his hoodie off? I said, you tell me. He said, well, I tell the kid, hey, remove your hoodie, pull your pants up. And I said, well, let me ask you a question. What's the student's name? Oh, it could be anybody. I'm like, give me a student's name. Well, I don't know most of them because they're in ninth grade and I'm a junior teacher. I said, well, there you go. See, that's the problem. I said, let's role play. And I said, you're the student with the hoodie on your head and you're the student with your pants sagging. He said, okay. I said, what's your name? He said, Mark. I said, all right, here we go. So I walk up to him. I said, hey, how you doing, sir? I'm Mr. Davis. What's your name? Mark. Hey, Mark, what's going on? Nothing much. Hey, Mark, you know, I don't want you to get in trouble. So why don't you, you know, pull your hoodie down because, you know, we're not supposed to have hoodies on and pull your pants up so nobody calls you. And, hey, Mark, where are you headed to right now? I'm going to English. Well, let me walk with you. And he said, I said, why do you think I'm walking with him? He goes, why? I said, so I can continue to talk to him, but also so when I move out of sight, he doesn't pull his hoodie back on and drop his pants back down. So I'm going to walk with him and continue to talk to him. And I said, so now this kid may not want to have his hoodie off his head. He may not want to have his pants pulled up, but he did it. I changed his behavior. I'm not going to change his attitude right away, but I'm going to change his behavior. And once his behavior becomes a success for him, he'll change his own attitude. So, and he said, well, I'm going to try that. He sent me an email a couple of months later. He goes, Mr. Davis, that has made the biggest difference in the world. I said, yeah. Hey, kid, pull your hoodie, pull your pants up, take your hoodie off. That's not, it's not positive. But if you know that student's name, now you're talking to a person and they can identify you because you took the time to introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the student feels like you walking with them. Oh, he wants to hold me accountable, so let me. You know, it's kind of like they act like they don't want rules, but they really do. And so they feel like you care, right, by walking with them. And, well, that leads me to your second book. I'm just curious, The Reeducation of the African-American Child in Today's School System. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
I wrote that book because I was tired of people pointing fingers at whose fault was it that our children were not, you know, were not competing nationally against all the other kids in at the same rate. Now, in Texas, we have an 89% graduation rate of African-American kids. We're the second highest in the nation behind Iowa, believe that. And the thing is, even though we're graduating 89% of our African-American kids, we're not graduating them at the top 10%. We're not graduating them in the top 5%. You know, we're not graduating them in the top 1%. So that's why I wrote the book, because honestly, there are so many things that we can do, we all can do. And instead of pointing a finger, I wrote it from this perspective, the parent, the community, the schools, right, the school services, the teachers, and even the student. And so we all work together. And as one. So what can we do as parents? What can we do as a community? What can we do as far as school systems? What can we do as far as services that we offer our children? So I look at it. The parent is the CFO, the chief financial officer, the chief family officer. Your child is your investment.
I like that.
Are you going to make a bad investment? Are you going to make, no, you're going to make sure your investment is working for you. So the community. And I believe this, and I just had this conversation with a group of teachers today. She said, the teacher said to me, Ms. Davis, we have to take back our communities. I said, we haven't lost our communities. We need to start to reinvest in our communities. I said, if you have a house in that community, you already own that community. Now you need to reinvest in the community. We have to let people know crime is not going to be appreciated here. And I said, the problem with, well, we associate communities with high crime and this and that with a low performing school. Well, if you don't take care of your home, someplace you live, how much care are you going to put into a place you visit, your school? So the community, we have to get involved in our community. We have to start to, here's the biggie. We have to begin to start again, loving and cherishing our elderly. Right? Where is that gone? We have to revere our elderly. These are the people who've done so much for us, right?
Right.
And then we have to look at our young and invest in them. We have to keep the streets clear so they can get to school. So that's our chief family officer. And then the school system, the superintendent and the school board, that's our board of directors, right? The superintendent is our COO, our chief operating officer. If you're a CFO, a CEO, and your COO is costing you money, what are you going to do with them?
Fire them.
You're going to fire them. That's right. So we got to get on those school boards so we can make a difference. We got to get on those school boards. And we cannot, I know every parent can't run for school board, but the people on the board who represent your district, your precinct, your community, they need to be working for you. Again, now we're talking about services that we offer our children. We have to make sure that our children are taking advantage of the services that are out there. So many times, we don't even know as parents what we can ask for and what the school can give us. You talked about an IEP. under RTI, response to intervention, every student is on an IEP, right? 100% mm-hmm. of our students are under RTI. So every student is under an IEP, an individual education plan. Next, our teachers. Supposed to be, right? Again, right? Right. Well, we're talking, that's what we're talking about, though, right? Education needs mm-hmm. a champion. Here are the things that should be happening. Let's make sure they do happen. You know, so our teachers are the chief academic officers. We need to make sure that those teachers are giving our kids 100%, and putting the best teachers in front of our children. You know, I know that a lot of teachers, here's the thing, as a principal, I only made moves that benefited children. I said the needs of children far outweigh the wants of adults. So if I had a department come to me and say, well, Miss McClown wants to be the AP teacher for senior English because she's tired of teaching freshmen. If you're the best freshman teacher on my campus, I'm not moving you just because that's what you want to do. Now, if you want to leave, that's fine, but I need my mm-hmm. best teacher teaching my ninth grader. You know, you shouldn't mm-hmm. get to go to 12th grade and teach 12th grade because, oh, that's the easiest grade, and those kids already want to graduate and out of here because I've been teaching 25 years. If you are passionate mm-hmm. about being a teacher, teach. There are three mindsets for teachers, I believe. One is, it's called the job mindset. I teach because I get off summers, I have holidays off, and it's, you know, it's not that stressful. I'm off, I'm home by 5, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a check through children. That's a job mindset. And you know that you don't, how long does it take for you to recognize that teacher on your campus? Not long, right?
Not long, right.
Not long, right. And the kids know it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually yeah. that teacher causes more problems on the campus than the students do. Because that teacher is promoting that apathetic mentality on the whole campus. The next one is a career mindset, and that's the person who wants to be superintendent, and it's a career through children. Now, they're good teachers, though, right? But they're not going to
mm-hmm.
stay in the classroom long because they want to move up. Their goal is to move up, become assistant superintendent, executive director, superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take advantage of that teacher while we have them because they're going to move up. But
mm-hmm.
the one that I cherish the most is the purposeful mindset teacher. This teacher won't leave the classroom. They
mm-hmm.
want to be in front of kids. That's what they want to do. When you try to move them up to department chair, department head, and they're like, is that going to take one of my classes away from me because I want to teach? We need more teachers like that.
Is this in a book? Do you have this in one of your books? The three mindsets?
No, the mindset, I do that when I do the, working with my 4D students. That's going to be in that book.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yeah. So I just kind of put them together because when you start talking about the reeducation of the reeducation of African child, it's not just about whose fault is it. It's what can I do, and then now I need to what do you do, and then what do you do, and just if we just take care of our own responsibilities as parents, and then we can hold the next person accountable. But we can't sit
mm-hmm.
and just point fingers at everybody if nobody's doing their job, right? And like you say, it's hard to get parents to come in sometimes. There's a school district
mm-hmm.
here in Texas, and it is 100% Title I. And it's a huge school district. They have like 11 high schools. The superintendent and her staff, they walked and knocked on doors of kids who wasn't coming to school, kids who've been missing school. They went and knocked on doors in all these neighborhoods and got those kids back in school.
That's dedication.
And you know what? I guarantee you, no one had ever done that. And when the parent got that knock on the door and here's a superintendent standing in front of her, they were like, whoa, you know?
Right.
But again,
mm-hmm.
we have to show how much we love our kids and how much we are willing to invest in our kids and our communities and our parents. And then our parents and our kids and our communities are going to reinvest in those schools. But as long as we just
mm-hmm.
use, you know, as long as we're just using our kids for enrollment and ADA and money, and you know, it's just not going to work. People
mm-hmm.
know when they're not a priority.
Right. Definitely. And I think that is, of course, why some teachers leave. And I also think that's why your three mindsets are hugely important, because perhaps even at the or when teachers are hired during the orientation process, or maybe at the beginning of every year, if teachers and the district thought about why they are teaching, then you could, like, if you broke up the teachers into the three mindsets, then you could figure out maybe with each kind of mindset, how can we retain this teacher? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Based on whatever their purpose or career goal is, but understand them so we can help better have a plan to keep them in the classroom and be effective for our students.
Oh, sure. I asked a friend of mine. She's one of the top performing high schools in the state of Texas. And I asked her, I said, mm-hmm. I had just done a meeting with some leaders. I said, tell me when you hire somebody, what do you look at? What do you look for? Make sure they know the content, make sure they're certified, just the regular things, right? And
right.
She said, and I want to make sure that they like children. And that's important to me because that's my biggie. I want to make sure you like children because I can't teach you to love children. I can teach you how to teach. I can teach you strategies. I can't teach you how to love children.
Right.
And she said, why do you ask? I said, well, because it's really funny that we spend millions of dollars coming up with mission and vision statements, but we don't use the mission and vision of our campus and our school districts to hire people. Why are we hiring people who don't fit the mission and vision of the school?
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself is a dilemma. That's an internal dilemma. If this is my mission and vision and this teacher I hire doesn't fit that, doesn't believe that, are they going to stay?
No.
And they're not going to be successful either. So,
right.
Like you said, look at that. Here's what I do. When I hire teachers, they have to fit. Here are the three things I look at. Do they love children? First and foremost, do they love children? Second, what is their purpose for teaching? Third, I look at their, certification.
Mm-hmm.
So here's would you rather hire, and I'm just going to ask you, be honest with me, I'm just going to tell you what we do. We hire teachers who are highly skilled, or we hire people just in across every industry. We hire people who are highly skilled but tend to have low morality.
Mm-hmm.
But we should hire somebody who is medium skill with high morality because that's the person we can invest in. And that's the person who's going to invest in us. The person that's high skill with low morality will cheat whenever they have an opportunity because they want to make sure that they look good. You see? So we need to start focusing on people, our teachers, our adults, our educators who have high morality. And then we can make them better teachers. We can make them better at their skill and their craft. Right? High morality,
right.
Love children and have a purpose. How successful do you think that person is going to be?
Very successful.
Very successful, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you want that person in front of your child? I know I would.
Yes, I would too. I would too. Probably districts don't do that because they're in such a need for teachers. So they, will hire anyone as long as they have even if they don't have certification, they'll hire them. They just need a body in the class.
Because of the high turnover again, right? Back to high turnover.
Right.
Teachers is the highest. Now, when I say this, you're going to go, Mr. Davis, that can't be true. Teaching has the highest turnover of every industry in this country. Telecommunications, technology, retail, media and entertainment, government, and even fast food.
Wow.
And I know you don't believe that I'm going to straighten it out for you. It's fast food because we only calculate full-time employees, and there's not a whole lot of full-time employees in fast food. We lead the nation in turnover in every industry. And that, and in Texas, I have to tell you, the quality of life for a teacher in Texas is really good because the cost of living isn't high. We don't have state income tax, and we pay our teachers really well, But we have to do something better. You asked me earlier about why people leave. Some just leave the field altogether because, we know one-third is going to leave within 5 years, right? They're going to leave within 5 years because, like you say, didn't feel supported, didn't feel valued, administration wasn't strong. They put them in a situation where they could not be successful, right? Dissatisfaction. That's the number one. But see, dissatisfaction covers an array of things. But when you ask them, that's on the thing, why on the list of why they leave, it's like 65%. Personal, family reasons, you know. It happens, right? And it happens. You have, you could have a death in the family, a divorce or whatever, and now you have a lifestyle change and you're moving back home or moving back where you came from. You know, you have people who go to college, you know, in Texas, but they're from California. They get married here in Texas. They get a divorce where they're going back to California, so they'll leave to pursue another job. And they pursue other jobs because they feel like that career would be more rewarding to them than teaching. You know, so 28% financial. We can keep the other 72% if we invest in our teachers, if we show them how much we value them. You know, I used to do something really, it was, to me, it was so small. But on my, my administrative meetings were Monday morning and Thursday afternoon, right? Because I didn't want to have anybody stand after school on Friday. I would get home to your family, you know. I value their time. So on Monday, every administrative meeting, I would invite two or three teachers into my meetings, have them a sub in there, right, while they're in a meeting. And I would have every teacher and every administrator on my staff, including myself, we had to take a piece of paper, fold it in half, and then we had to find three teachers. Think about three teachers who we saw doing a great job, what they were doing and why we thought it was such a great job. And we had a list of things that we looked at, you know, going the extra mile, helping students, going, you know, doing all the things that you know that make kids successful, help make students successful. And we would write three teachers a note, handwritten note, and then we decorated. We had the stickers from all the colleges our teachers went to, and we put those stickers on there. We do all this stuff, and we go and we hand that to that teacher. And it'd be signed by all of us in that classroom, I mean, in that meeting. And you'd walk around and throughout the course of the year, you see those notes on every bill, on every bulletin board, right? On every board in every classroom. But also, you'll walk in classrooms and wouldn't see any notes. That would tell me this is the teacher I need to help. I need to support the teacher and help them because there's a reason this teacher doesn't have any of those handwritten notes, right?
Right.
And it's a way to see the weaknesses by focusing on all the strengths of our schools. So I found out who these teachers were by doing what? Celebrating the ones who were doing a great job.
Right.
And that's a positive.
And that's good.
That's a positive.
Right. That is a positive. And that you recognize that the teachers who were struggling needed help instead of ignoring them or, you know, dismissing them.
Oh, yeah. And instead of talking about them in the lounge, oh, that teacher don't have any notes.
Right.
You know? Well, and I'm going to tell you, so this brings me to so I wrote a program, but it's called Outcome Constructive Dialogue, and it's to help reduce
teacher turnover.
Outcome
Constructive, say it again.
Outcome Constructive Dialogue. Outcome Constructive Dialogue. And, and I say we have to be OCD about OCD. And so what it is, this Outcome Constructive Dialogue is the conversation that we have with our teachers before the conversation turns crucial. It greatly reduces the documentation process. And it almost does away with growth plans and action plans. And I devised this and created it because teachers need to be a very integral part of their own success story, right? So in the district that I worked with over the last 2 years, we've seen a decrease in teacher turnover of 40 to 45%.
That's amazing.
Right.
Wow.
And so this is based on a concept called the value of tiny gains, right? So if you have a teacher, and, you know, it takes us roughly 6 weeks before we realize that this teacher is struggling because first you got to deal with, you know, trying to get kids in the classroom, trying to get the school year started. You're trying to get classrooms level because this classroom has too many. You still work on student schedule. You still have kids coming in who stayed out of school past Labor Day, you know. So it takes us about 4 to 6 weeks before we even start to notice our teachers are struggling, right? So if you have a teacher, you have two teachers who are struggling, right? And you do absolutely nothing for one of those teachers, they're going to decrease in value 0.01% a day. So by the end of the year, that teacher's value to you is less than 0.03%. which means that teacher has been no value to what? Students. Now, the teacher who also started at the exact same point, and you invest in them, and you get a 0.01% gain every day, by the end of the year, that teacher is 37% better. And if you do that for 2 years, that teacher is almost 80% better than the day you started working with them. The value of tiny gains. And
so
you're not asking
works.
A lot. Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Right.
So what I do is when I meet with a teacher, and if I ask you right now, how did you feel as a teacher? And I told you I was looking at these things, and how do you feel about your discipline, classroom management, student engagement, and success rate? And you go, say, out on a scale of 1 to 10, and you're like, Miss Davis, I'm probably a 3. And I was, well, how long have you been teaching, Stacy? I've been teaching 15 years. Okay, and at 15 years, Stacy, have you ever rated yourself higher than a 3? At one time I think I was about an 8.5. Well, what was going on in your career at that time? And you tell me all these great things that were going on in your career that made you 8.5. My next question to you is, well, what can I do to help you get back to that 8.5?
Right.
And you tell me. So then you and I come up with a plan, right? And that plan is, how can I make you 0.5% better this time next week? Not 1 point, 0.5. How can I make you 0.5% better next week? And then 0.5% better the next week. And we're following up on it, and we're doing these things. Oh, Stacy, what would that look like when I walk into a classroom? What would the kids be doing? What would you be doing? And what should I expect to see, right? And every week we're meeting, and you're getting there. At the end of the first month, you were, when we first started, you were a 3. A month later, you're a 5.
Mm-hmm.
2 months later, what are you? You're a 7. Right? And this is based on what you told me you needed. And I'm going to support you. Now, there are some times when you do this and teachers go, I don't see it that way. Well, that teacher got to be more, it's going to be a directive. That teacher's not going to be collaborative. But that's just a thing. You're never going to have 100% of anything. But most teachers really appreciate the time that we put into doing these things, because it's not documentation. It's not a write-up. It's not a growth plan. This is something to support you and make you better.
Wow. Thank you so much for all of this information, especially you just mentioned the OCD outcome constructed dialogue. I think that could even be helpful with students and report cards during parent conferences to have.
See, now you're thinking.
That's good. Very self, reflective. And as you said, with the teachers, you don't need the growth plans, because they've already discussed what they need to do. So it just, decreases clutter and gets straight to the point, it seems. So I wanted to thank you for being a guest on the show. Did you want to add something?
No, go right ahead. No, time is flying. We had such a good time.
I know. Thank you so much for being on our show. Can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, you can reach me at larry@larrydavis.com. That's my email. You can go to my website, which is larrydavis.com, and you can feel free to call me at 817-793-7074. Over the next few months, I will be presenting at the TASB, which is Texas Association of Black School Educators Conference. I'll be presenting in St. Charles, Illinois, at the CTE Teach Conference. They want me to present on disciplined students and how to help them be successful. And I'll be presenting at a conference in New Orleans, and that's just in February. So, and I have more to come.
Oh,
so please look out for me. You say you substitute, give my information to your district. I'll come in and help them with their teacher retention.
Okay, sure. I'll be in touch.
Sure. Yes.
All righty.
Well,
that's
need to
co-author
a new book anyway.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm all for it. So thank you again, Mr. Davis. That's our program for today. Be sure to listen to the next episode of Season 3 on Tribe Family Channel, Teacher Talks with me, Stacy McClam. It will be in 2 weeks again on Monday. You can find me on all social media platforms at Stacy McClam, StacieMcClam. Thanks so much, Mr. Davis. Have a good evening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Stacey Matt-Clam. I am the author of School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching. I wrote this book last summer after I resigned from the teaching profession. Writing the book was therapeutic for me. In the book, I discuss why I left the teaching profession. I also discuss trauma and mental health concerns that many students, especially very young students, endure. Finally, I discuss teacher trauma, also known as secondary traumatic stress. This book is not just for educators. It's for anyone who has walked away from something that was not serving them. I am realizing now that my path in education is outside of the classroom. Check out my book, School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching, on Amazon in digital and paperback format, or go to my website at www.stacymatclam.com. Again, that's www.stacymcclam.com. You can find me on all social media platforms at Stacey Matt-Clam. Thank you.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today, sporting backpacks and they're on their way, yo. Trying to learn the things we like, going to my class, everything's alright, oh. No one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No,
whatever grade level or type of school,
my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together,
I'm shaping students that'll shape forever.
The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools. And you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse. So I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse.
Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, you're opening up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I run my class like I know I should,
I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood.
I thought you understood, I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah.
Getting my class to spread the wind,
being at school makes me wanna sing, oh.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
We can change the world together, teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever, I think it's time we change the weather.
We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future, and the future's gaining speed.
If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed.
And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is on time, gotta open up their eyes.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses.
And we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. You're jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Class is online,
gonna open up the minds.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.